You're listening to In Pursuit of Community with Elevate Branson. My name's Brian Stallings, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Elevate Branson, along with my wife, Amy. Say hi, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
There, she did it. Yay.
He tries every week for me to say that.
That's
really
right.
Cheesy joke.
Well, you are listening to season two of our podcast. If you missed season one, go back and start from the beginning and catch up with us so that you can know what we're talking about from previous episodes. I think we talked a little bit about this on a couple of episodes ago, that we were having the New York Times come out and do a story on our new transportation program called Elevate Rides, featuring My City Rides. And not only did this story highlight the benefits of our transportation program and the impact that having affordable transportation has had on our program participants, but it also highlighted the tension that we have here in Branson, where our community prides itself on our infusion of genuine Christian values into our culture. Yet when it comes to individuals experiencing poverty in our community, we seem to overlook or want to maybe not acknowledge some of the things that are going on. And as Christ followers, we are commanded to care for the poor. So why do we think that is? Amy, why do you think that is?
Well, I think, like, just in life in general, it's easier not to deal with something that's hard to deal with, something that could be challenging, that could be touchy. It's easier just to act like it's not going on than to have to actually figure out maybe how to come up with some solutions and move forward in those areas.
Well, I think, like most cities that have issues and problems, they're not fun topics to talk about. Mm-mm. And quite frankly, they're not easy solutions. I mean, we've talked on here about poverty in the past, that it's not complicated, but complex.
Right.
And complicated would be like a jet engine that you could, once you figured it out, you could replicate it and you got multiple jet engines. Poverty doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're dealing with human beings and it's very complex.
Right.
And so it's not an easy subject to tackle. It's not pretty and sexy. And it being a tourist town, I think we always want to portray our best image forward to attract visitors to the area. But at the end of the day, if we ignore these problems, they're going to rear their ugly head, and then it's going to be too late to get in front of them.
Right.
You know, some of the things I think that we need to discuss as a community, and when I say community, I mean a community. It's going to take all of us. It can't just be delegated to a certain segment of churches or certain segment of nonprofits. It's going to take the business community. It's going to take community leaders. It's going to take community residents. It's going to take the churches and the nonprofits. It's going to take a collaboration of everyone coming together to address these situations.
Exactly.
You know, homelessness is not good for our business community, and it's not good for tourists to see people panhandling on the corners. And putting up a few signs on the corners to say don't give to the panhandlers is probably not going to be the solution that works. We've actually got to build relationships with those individuals on the corners to find out what their situation is and why they are standing on the corners. Because I know in the past, we've had individuals that don't even live in Branson make their way down from other areas just to come here and take advantage of our tourists by panhandling on the corners.
I had a great conversation with a volunteer actually right before we came in to do the podcast, and she was saying that, and she's a professional woman, and she said that when she was growing up, her mom had some mental disabilities that were going on, and when she was in third grade, she can remember thinking, if something happened to my dad, my mom wouldn't be able to take care of us. And she said, so when people say the comment, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, she says it really pushes a button in her, because that's not the case for every person. There's different situations and different circumstances and stories in people's lives. And so maybe one person was able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but that's not every person. You know, it's just to say a statement like that, is just not understanding the complexity of the problems.
Well, and you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And so if you don't know how to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, how do you do that? Somebody's right. got to show you how that's done.
Yeah.
And that's done through relationships. And, you know, you think about a lot of latchkey kids, you know, starting, you know, probably in the 70s when that started becoming a thing, and how after the sexual revolution of the 60s, dads started becoming absent and you had single moms. And a lot of those things you would learn from fathers, and fathers are pretty absent in the picture now.
Right.
And you have two parent households working. And so there's not somebody showing, you know, kids how to have strong work ethic, how to, you know, look somebody in the eye and have conversation, how to shake somebody's hand even.
Right.
All those things are things that we teach in our Elevate Work program. And it's amazing how many people don't know those things.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think by not addressing these issues, by not addressing them, but almost like not acknowledging these issues, it's causing this to grow at an exponential rate. And we have seen that happen in places like Detroit. Detroit, inner city, poverty was growing at a rapid pace, and the city decided to ignore it. And before long, crime had gotten really bad in the inner city, and people were leaving, but they couldn't sell their homes. And so you had these beautiful 2,000 square foot homes that were selling for $8,000 because nobody wanted to live in the inner city. And basically, there were so many calls for service by fire, ambulance, and police that they really decided that they'd be better off responding further out. And so you saw the inner city of Detroit become feral.
Right.
And just wild. And the problem with a tourist town versus a place like Detroit, Detroit had other industries. So there's manufacturing there. There's different industries other than just tourism that help drive their economy. We don't have that luxury in Branson. And so when the tourists don't come, you'll see businesses that are not rooted in the community, businesses that their corporate offices in Florida or the corporate offices in Vegas, they'll pull their operations from here. And it'll have significant impact on our community. And so we have to address it by first acknowledging it. It's almost like we need to take our community through a 12-step problem. And what's step number one?
Acknowledge that there's a problem.
Admitting there's a problem, right?
That's right.
And so
that's right.
I think that's
the hardest step there is, I think.
It is. It is. But we've got to do it. Otherwise, you know, we've talked about this for the last 15 years and really hit on it even harder the last 10 years. And we're starting to see that happen. We're seeing significant rise in crime, especially theft. Just this month, the Branson Police Department had a newspaper article that came out that said Branson Police Department advises people to be alert of a rise in car break-ins.
Right.
And if you're a tourist and your car gets broken into in a motel parking lot that you're staying at, you may not want to come back to Branson.
Yeah.
And so we've got to address it. By ignoring it is not working.
Right. You can't fix what you don't think is broken.
Yeah. And when you read the New York Times article, it highlights some of the issues that our local workforce struggles with. It doesn't make it untrue. And right. I don't think it's a bad reflection on Branson. It just is saying that, hey, we got some issues we need to discuss.
Right.
And we got to start coming up with viable solutions.
Yeah, let's get on the same page with some of these things, and let's try to come together as a community and rally around the workers here that are struggling and needing a hand up.
Yeah, and I think there's misconception, you know, because a majority of our workforce live in motels. I think there's this misconception that everybody in a motel is a bad apple.
Right.
And that is not the case. This problem has been exacerbated because of the lack of affordable housing.
Right.
And so what we've seen since COVID is this huge rise in VRBOs and Airbnbs. And because of that, when any affordable housing came on the market say, $150,000 to $200,000 home came on the market, it was immediately snatched up by investors for Airbnb or VRBOs for nightly rentals for the tourists. That actually took away from having inventory for our local workforce to be able to afford housing, which has forced a lot of folks that could afford a $200,000 mortgage into a motel, because your next step up now is $300,000 to $400,000, and there's just no inventory for that.
Right.
So everyone in a motel is not necessarily in poverty, but I think there's this misconception that everybody in a motel is kind of a bad seed.
Now, we actually went to Olive Garden on Sunday with Brian's parents for Father's Day, and the manager came over and he said, "Are you guys with Elevate?" We said, "Yes, we are." He said, "Oh, I just want to say thank you so much. I live over in one of the extended stays." And he said, "And I'm never there because I'm working when you guys come by, but I just want to tell you how much that we appreciate it, how much we all appreciate it at the motel." But he was manager over at Olive Garden.
Yeah, so either he's not making enough money as a manager, or it's a lack of inventory, or both.
Right.
For him to find, you know, good, safe, affordable housing. But, you know, for real and lasting change, we can't just talk about the problem. We've got to come together as a community and tackle it together. And I find that in some of the conversations I've been in over the years, we've looked very short-sighted, and that short-sightedness might be closing a motel or remodeling a motel, but that's not going to be a long-term solution for our community.
Right.
And we've got to think longer term. I mean, we've been doing this for 15 years, and we've been saying this from day one, and we just haven't seen much in the way of change from the motels.
Well, hopefully articles like this one that just came out will start to open people's eyes and hearts and desire to have some dialogue around it so that we can take some steps forward.
Yeah, and I think there's this, you know, mindset, because we do it as well. We're guilty of it, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And I think if we don't focus on it, we don't have to deal with it, then we don't think about it. But I think if we want to think about Branson in the next 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we need to start addressing that, and we need to get passionate about it. And then what I always notice with these major topics of workforce development, transportation, and housing is we get together often. We have identified the problem. We complain about it. But really what it's going to take is somebody to roll up their sleeves to do it. So action's got to take place.
Right.
But then finances have to be brought to the table.
And that's where people go, eh.
Right, right.
We don't really want to have to pay out for this.
But you have to look at it as an investment, not only in the community, but in your property.
Right.
Because if crime rises due to a lack of continued affordable housing, lack of transportation, a lack of dealing with substance abuse and these other issues, property values are going to drop. And when property values drop, people are going to wish we'd invested in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because now it's going to hit your pocketbook.
Right.
And so there's just some dialogue that needs to take place and some real understanding of some solutions that can be done, and a collaboration of funding and work that can be done to do it. I mean, why do you think people don't do it? Other than they're busy, right?
Well, I think that's the biggest reason, is that we get so busy with our life, our families, our fun activities that we do, and then get back from work, and you just want to veg out. I mean, I totally could understand why people don't do it, but, you know, before you know it, week after week, month after month, year after year goes by, and you haven't really made a difference in the community. You haven't really done anything, which I'm only saying that because that was me for many, many years, and so I recognize it looking back on it.
So what do you think it takes for caring for those in need in our community to become a priority?
Oh, that's just a good question. We had a gathering of volunteers recently, and that was the question I wanted to ask. They were very just solid, good, steady volunteers that just love loving on people. And so I wanted to know, why are you so consistent? Why are you so sold out for this? And pretty much I think generally what everybody came back to was that they just wanted to make a difference in people's lives, and they liked the sense of community of doing it together as a group.
Because I think Branson would consider itself probably the belt buckle of the Christian Bible Belt.
Right.
I mean, we see a lot of Christian values being mm-hmm. mentioned in Branson. We sure. see gospel as part of many of the shows.
Right.
We have a giant cross on the way into town. And we are mandated as a Christian to take care of the poor. It's actually referenced, taking care of the poor and the oppressed are actually referenced in the Bible the most of any commandment. There's over 2,200 lines of scripture right. that talk about taking care of the poor.
That's pretty important.
Yet we don't really see that happening.
Right.
And so why do you think that is? Because this, again, it's a commandment. It's right. not a, well, if you get around to it on Sunday after church, go do right. it. It's biblically commanded of yeah. us to do it. So yeah. what is the motivator for the Christian community of Branson to actually do that?
The motivator? I wish I could figure that out. I don't know. We've been talking about this for years, trying to kind of figure out what that could be so we could maybe help motivate and encourage our community and the churches to get a little bit more involved in the things that God has us doing here. And so I wish I had a good answer for that. I really do. What do you think the answer is?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's pain.
Pain?
Pain, yeah. You know, when I'm uncomfortable or my body aches because I need mm-hmm. to drop a few pounds, that's mm-hmm. usually the indicator that says, oh, am I tired of hurting? Am I tired of feeling this way? I need to make a change.
Right.
And the problem with that is that by the time the community experiences that pain, it's going to be hard to rebuild
right.
the attraction of tourists back to our area. And so
how do we get there before it gets to a point that's going to be hard to reel back from?
That's a great question that I think the Israelites have struggled throughout the last 6,000 years in the Bible, because if you see their pattern mm-hmm. is not unlike ours, where right. it's we love God,
right?
We fall away from God, there's great pain,
right.
and then we come back to God, and yeah. then 30, 40, 50 years, 100 years, we do it all over again.
Right. Well, I could say for myself personally, when I decided that, you know, I wanted to do something outside of myself, it was when I was searching for a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And just felt like, you know, I'm blessed. I have a good family, and you know, I've got a lot of things that people would consider pretty good blessings, a house and car and a good spouse and all of that. So like I have.
You have a good spouse?
Yeah, that's you.
Who's that? Oh, okay.
but there was just that thing that just was like, okay, we go to church and we hear what's being preached and we see our friends there and we go out to lunch afterwards and we do all that. But it just felt like this can't be all there is to it. There's got to be, like, what are we missing? And then when we started to serve, it came very clear to us that right there was what we were missing. And what I love about it today is that it has really just helped us as a couple to grow so much closer, to be able to do this together and to be a part of seeing people's lives change and seeing people come to Christ as a result. I mean, there's nothing better than that. There just is nothing better. And all the miracles we've gotten to witness over the past 15 years, it's just life-giving. It's so life-giving.
Do you think, not knowing where to start or how to get involved holds people back?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, because it took us a long time to figure that out as well.
Well, we had no idea what we were doing when we started.
No, we learned
the hard way.
Yeah, a lot of hard knocks.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's what you call the good times, right? Looking back on the good old days.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd call them the good old days, but because of that, uh-huh. I mean, I do feel like we can save a lot of people that learning curve. Mm-hmm. Because we've experienced it, we've overcome it in most cases, and so we know how to avoid some of the mistakes that we made early on.
Well, we had a group that came in this morning to find out more about volunteering. There was about, I don't know, 15 or so that came in this group, and we got to share about the different opportunities that we have here, which are a lot of different opportunities and a lot of different ways. But I think what I really wanted to express was, hey, just come do life with us, you know, do life with the people here and the volunteers here and the neighbors that we get to serve. I mean, you'll just really love it. It's a good group of people. It's not just something we do for work and then go home. It's a lifestyle.
Well, and we talked about this on last week's episode, mm-hmm. was loneliness.
Right.
And the best way to overcome that is getting involved. Right. And what a better thing to be able to get involved in than community development, mm-hmm. because you're helping your community.
Yeah.
I mean, where you live and work and do socialize.
Right.
And so we would love to have people come and do that. You know, community development is very multifaceted. Mm-hmm. And at Elevate, I know that we are specifically focusing on housing, transportation, and workforce development because we feel like those are the areas that our community is lacking the most in, and feel like that's where we can make the greatest impact.
Mm-hmm.
But for true community development, it really comes down to building relationships.
Mm-hmm, always.
And I think on last season's podcast, I talked about this before, but our tiny house community is really about building community and relationships.
Right.
And the byproduct is housing.
Right.
And so affordable housing doesn't have to be just housing, because obviously that doesn't work, right? We have mm-hmm. Section 8 housing all throughout the country, and most of that's a disaster. What makes affordable housing work is community. And we know that based on the experiment that we talked about mm-hmm. in the previous podcast last season, that in the 1920s, this professor took a rat, put it in a cage, and had two bottles of water. One bottle was plain water, one bottle was drugged water. And every time he did this experiment, the rat would compulsively drink the drugged water and overdose and die. And then in the 70s, Professor Alexander came along and started looking at the cage. And he built a cage with wheels and balls for rats to push around and blocks of cheese for them to eat. And then he put multiple rats in there and the same two bottles of water. None of the rats compulsively drank from the drug bottle of water, and none of them overdosed and died, which showed us that when they had friends, when they had a support mm-hmm. system, when they had activities going on, they didn't turn to that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. so I think as we have entered this epidemic of loneliness, we've got to build mm-hmm. community. And that means instead of getting mad at the panhandler on the corner, we need to come alongside him and find out his story. So here at Elevate, we try to do that by empowering people to change and meeting them where they are and finding out their story and come alongside them in multiple ways through our programs and services. And of course, that starts with trust. So we have to build an element of trust with them relationally for them to be able to find their purpose. We can't, going back to your point, mm-hmm. we can't just tell them to pull up their bootstraps and get a job, because that's not building trust. That's being a parent to them, and we need to be an equal to them.
Right. And honestly, do you like somebody coming to you when you're hurting and you're struggling with some stuff and just basically say, suck it up, you'll be fine, you got this, you can do it, just suck it up? It doesn't really work well for me. I don't know about you. Might work for you. I don't know.
Well, I think there are times where you weave truth with love in
sure,
there, right?
Sure.
And so it doesn't mean you don't speak the truth
right.
to individuals, but you also help them walk that out.
Right.
You don't just...
Right.
You don't just say, go over there and clean your house. You say, come on, let me show you how to clean
right.
your house.
I think a lot of what I'm saying is this attitude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? It's just an attitude.
Yeah. People make sustainable life change not because we are the heroes that mm-hmm. swoop in and save them from their circumstances, mm-hmm. but because they are empowered by support right. and the love that they receive and that they experience when real, authentic community happens mm-hmm. with them.
And I think we have to be open to understand that we can learn from our neighbors in need, just like they can learn from us. We don't have all the answers. We don't know it all. We can learn from other people. We can learn from people that are struggling, and we can learn from our volunteers, and we can learn from our donors. We can learn from each other, and then we can do this thing together as a team.
And when you take as little as 5 hours a week to mm-hmm. pour into somebody, mentoring them in our Elevate Work program. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen incredible transformation. I got to share Daryl's story today about how when he first came to class and his head was down and he was telling a story and he was kind of mumbling how I thought he wouldn't make it and he ended up being the best student ever. Mm-hmm. And then when he's going out the door after graduation, I patted him on the back and I said, hey, I'm really proud of you for completing this class. And he stopped in the door and said, nobody's ever told me that.
Yeah.
And it just, that crushed me. It's hard to right. imagine because I've not been in Daryl's shoes. And so sometimes I think we look at people through our own lens of experience.
Yeah, and call me crazy here, but he is now currently a personal trainer.
Yeah.
That just blows me away.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like, number one, we've got to, step one, mm-hmm. admit the problem.
That's right.
Right? Acknowledge the
yes,
problem.
Be brave.
There's step two, we need to have authentic, open, transparent dialogue mm-hmm. around the problem.
Right, right.
And step three, we've got to come together with a viable solution. And sometimes we don't know that solution is going to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, we may have to just try it
right.
to see what happens. But we have to be willing to do that. We can't just right. dialogue the problem for years and years and years. It's funny because when we were bringing the transportation program, the scooter program that this New York Times article was all about to Branson, I had found an article from the Springfield Business Journal that was done in 2006. And one of the quotes in there was from the citizens of Branson about needing some sort of transportation in Branson. And it said, just hurry up and do something. And that was 17 years ago. And we still don't have public transportation right. other than right. possibly this scooter program that yeah. we've brought. And
right.
so we can't just talk about the problem for 17 years and not do anything. We
right.
need to
Let's
come
do
together.
Something.
We do, and so then,
right.
You know, step four is it's going to take action and it's going to take
mm-hmm.
finances.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make a commitment for the betterment of the community and for
right.
the betterment of our personal property values,
yeah.
our taxes, to start addressing it and
yeah.
quit ignoring it.
And we've always said if everybody would do a little bit, everybody do a little bit, could you imagine what our community would be like if everybody did a little bit volunteer-wise, if everybody did a little bit donation-wise? It would just be amazing. I mean, people would be talking.
Yeah. I mean, you think we have 13,000 roughly residents just in Branson,
mm-hmm.
and if everybody gave $1,200 a year.
Right.
I mean,
it's doable.
That'd be $1.4 million, $1.5
yeah.
million dollars that
right.
we could do a lot of things with.
Yeah.
So
to pour into people.
To pour in back into our community.
Right.
And so I just think first, step one, let's acknowledge it. Let's start talking about
That's
it.
That's right. So. Let's get out of denial.
But we do want to give a shout out to the New York Times because it was a great article.
It was very truthful.
Yeah, for, you know, Times I feel like can probably be a little liberal at times. But I felt like the article was written, mm-hmm. was very well done. I thought it was very positive on Elevate Branson.
Fair.
And really just It just identified the problems.
Right. That we see. That we see on a regular basis. We do.
And also that many of our neighbors see.
Right.
That they're a part of.
Right.
And so,
yeah.
You know, if you just stay on the strip and maybe just visit businesses and shows, you may not know some of this stuff mm-hmm. happens.
Right.
You know, that's one of the things that we hear a lot is people right. that come out with us and deliver meals. They go, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I've lived here for years.
That's right. We hear that all the time.
Because it is a hidden problem.
Yeah.
Well, you know, all of this talk about the problem mm-hmm. makes me hungry. I don't know about you.
I think everything makes you hungry.
But when I get hungry like this, I like to get a pizza from Neighbor's Hub. Mm-hmm. Or actually the bacon chicken ranch sandwich is pretty darn good. It's mm-hmm. kind of, I try not to do as much bread, so I get the thin crust pizza instead of the regular crust pizza. And then I try not to get the sandwich, so I do the pizza, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah, and you know what we always forget to talk about?
Frank's cookies?
No, the cauliflower crust.
Oh, cauliflower. Well,
I don't know if people know we have that here.
I don't eat cauliflower.
Well, no, but a lot of people that are trying to be healthy eat cauliflower crust, and it's absolutely delicious.
I'm allergic to fruits and vegetables. I try to stay.
I didn't know that was a real thing.
I try to stay with meats and cookies.
Yeah, and you do a really good job of
it. Well, you know, Ava's got some cookies that are the bomb in the coffee shop.
So. And her muffins, too. Whew, man.
Yes. So if you haven't had one of Frank's sandwiches or pizzas or a coffee or muffin from Ava, you need to visit Elevate mm-hmm. Branson and Elevate Coffee and Neighbors Hub Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 2 o'clock. And they will get you fixed up with some great eats. We talked about the scooters on a couple of episodes ago. We had Randy in here and talked about the scooter program with him. And somebody asked, well, how do they get a scooter? And that's a great question. It came from, it looks like somebody on our at Elevate Branson Instagram account. Or TikTok. Or Twitter or Facebook or any place that you want to reach us. But the way to do that, kind of think of it like this. So we have a limited number of scooters right now on hand. So we have designated those to just go to businesses that partner with us. Those businesses that partner with us, their employees get first choice of a scooter. So if you're an employee of a business, and you came to us and said, I work at Bob's Restaurant, and we looked at our partner list, and Bob's Restaurant is not on there. Unfortunately, you would not be able to get a scooter at this time. What we would do is say, Bob's Restaurant is not a partner. You can either go back to Bob and ask him to become a partner with us, or Dale's Restaurant over here is a partner with us, and maybe you'd want to go work there so you could get a scooter.
Sure, it's appealing.
Yeah, I mean,
I would.
It's ridiculous that people struggle with transportation and mm-hmm. our employers don't want to take advantage of that because that's dependable help. We heard from Randy that once he got transportation, mm-hmm. he was more dependable and reliable.
Right.
And his boss acknowledged
makes sense, because otherwise he was waiting on people to pick him up and drop him off, and you know how that goes.
Yep. So that's the first step. You have to be employed for 30 days. So you have to be able to show us that you have pay stubs to show that. And two, you have to work for an employer that's a business partner. And we have several of those. And so if you want to check that out, reach out to us and we can let you know who our business partners are, and maybe you need to make a job switch.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. What else we got going on? Let's see. We had another one come in from D. Toddy Squeeman asking about the New York Times article as well. And he said, I loved what it said. It did say that something about if we had less than 20 out there starting, is this program something that looks like it's going to last? And I would say yes to that, Mr. D. Toddy Squeeman. But we just got it started. I mean, we just launched that. J1s are just now getting in town. So with the rental program, we're starting to see a lot of rentals out there. So you're going to start seeing beep beep scooters everywhere. So watch out for scooters.
Start looking now because I'm seeing them a lot more now. I think we have how many out now?
Oh, there's over 20 out right now on the road. So, yeah, and we've got another class coming up this week of six or seven. So we're gonna have a lot of scooters out there by the end of this year.
Yeah, they're fun to see.
So,
they're really fun to see scooting on by you.
But keep on asking those questions, D. Toddy Squeeman, and we will keep throwing you answers. Now, have we landed on a name yet? We've talked about, you know, the elevators, the hooligans. Have we had any
That's
others?
That's all we've come up with so far. That's so lame.
We need our listeners to throw us some samples
of
names.
How do we motivate that? I mean, maybe whoever comes up with the winning name, we give a Theo.
Give a Theo plush to, Not a stuffed animal. We don't want to call him a stuffed animal. Theo gets offended by that.
So cute.
But, so keep those name suggestions coming. I still like the elevators, but...
come on. What are you, 80 years old?
Well, I'm pushing 80. I feel like it anyhow.
The elevators.
Yeah. All right, so we got a fun event coming up July 11th. It's a Leave a Legacy Luncheon. It's free to attend, but we've got KPM Advisors. KPM is an accounting company both here in Branson and Springfield, and they are going to be... hosting our luncheon and talking about the different tax benefits for donating to Elevate Branson or any charitable organization, and how QCDs, which are qualified charitable deductions or RMDs, can benefit you and also benefit the charity. And so they'll be talking about that. We'll also have financial advisors here that will be sharing ways that you can leave a legacy by leaving part of your will or trust or estate to Elevate Branson as a beneficiary, so that Elevate can continue to elevate our community for years to come. And so you don't want to miss it. It's free to attend. You do have to register. It's from 11:30 to 1 o'clock on July 11th. The other thing I'm super excited about is our three-day symposium that we'll be hosting August 16th through the 18th. So about a year ago, probably a year and a half ago, we came up with a plan to offer a branding license or an affiliate license of our programs and services to other communities. Our first one was Elevate Lebanon. Lebanon became an affiliate using our Elevate Work Program, Elevate Thrift Store, and Elevate Connections. And last year, we were nominated and awarded the Nonprofit of the Year by the Branson Lakes Area Chamber. But Elevate Lebanon was also awarded the Service Organization of the Year by their local chamber. And so that just tells you that our programs work in other communities. And so this year, we are hosting this three-day symposium where other communities can come and learn from us the things that we've learned. And it's going to be exciting. It's going to be just an outcome-driven community development conference where people can just learn what we do and take it to their community. And I'm just excited about being able to host that event.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
We've got some great speakers. Yep. We've got Peter Hershend, who is the co-founder of Hershend Family Entertainment in Silver Dollar City. And he's going to be talking about what donors look for when they look at organizations and how to attract donors. And I think that's valuable information for anybody that's in the nonprofit world or looking to start a nonprofit. So we've just got some fantastic speakers. We've got Heather Zembrowski, who is actually the vice president of our board, but she's also our grant writer, and she'll be talking about what grant funders look for when applying for those grants.
Yeah,
and just in the past year, she's past year and a half, I think she's over $3 million in grants that have been awarded. So she knows what she's talking about. And so we're just going to have all kinds of stuff. You can visit our website at elevatebranson.org to get more information and also to sign up, because it's going to fill up fast, and so be sure to book your spot.
Yeah, we have limited spacing.
So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. We're still working on the playground. The playground concrete was poured. The fencing is up. We're getting ready to add some climbing ropes and swings and fossil dig areas. So it's still a work in progress. And if you want to donate, you know, today is $1 Wednesday. We started this weeks ago. It's just a reminder, $1 Wednesday, that you can donate as little as a dollar to Elevate Branson to help these programs and services. Or you can add another zero or another number, not zero, but another number behind the $1. Or you can add several numbers behind that $1 on $1 Wednesday. And it's simple to donate. You just go to our website, hit the donate tab, and make a donation. You can become an advanced team sponsor and just support us monthly. There's lots of ways that you can give. One of the things we've got on our website now, too, is take a tour. So if you're visiting Branson, or if you're here in Branson and you want to learn a little bit more about what we do, you want to see our playground, you want to see our tiny house model,
right, our sensory room,
you can book a tour, and we would be glad to show you around our campus here.
Yep, that'd be fun.
Anything else you want to cover today, Amy?
No, I think we covered quite a bit, actually.
All right. Well, hopefully we left people with a good feeling after we beat them up on the community stuff. But let's do this together. Let's lock arms. Let's acknowledge the problem. Let's have some healthy dialogue around it. And let's come up with some solutions we can put in action.
Let's take the hill together.
That's right. You've been listening to In Pursuit of Community with Elevate Branson.